We are still on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph in Sota. We're just finishing up the Mishnah. We had a little controversial subject about teaching women Torah or not. So Rabbi Yeshua picks up on this idea with another interesting statement that will need to be elaborated later in the Gemara. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. We'll just say the words and it will be explained further. Rabbi Yeshua says, Raitza Isha Bekav Vetiflus. A woman prefers one kav. One kav means financial equity, we'll say, or financial means. One portion out of financial means, meaning a small amount, but Isha Bekav, but Vetiflus, but to have physical intimacy. She'd rather be intimate with a man that loves her than to eat food. That's the main Vetiflus. Okay, so that's what a woman prefers, one kav and physical intimacy over, she'd rather be in poverty, but with a husband that loves her. That's basically what he's saying. Okay, she'd rather have that than the following. Mites kavim, then nine kavs of financial wealth, which obviously you're a lot better off. Uprishus, and abstinence, and not being with a man. So in other words, she'd prefer having a man than money. That's at least in the days of the Gemara. Now it may be all different, but at least that's the way it's supposed to be. Next point. Hu Ayomer, Rabbi Yeshua also made another cryptic statement that will all need to be elaborated later on in the Gemara. He's going to talk about four people that really bring destruction to the world. What are these types of people? Number one, Chassid Shaita, a foolish, pious person. The person's acting religiously, but in a foolish way. For example, a very religious person sees a woman drowning in the ocean. The guy knows Bronze Cross life-saving. He says, well, I'd love to save her, but you know, Torah doesn't let me touch a woman, so I guess I can't help her. So that's a foolish, pious person. What? I think, yes. That I think is the example. In other words, the guy's trying to show he's a pious person, but he's showing it in a foolish way, right? Something wrong with being pious, but in a smart way. Okay, but the guy's saying, listen, I have to be a pious person. So it's called a foolish, pious person. Second, Verasha Arum, a cunning evildoer. We'll see what that is. Someone like an ace of personality who's makes himself looks like a tzaddik, but he isn't. The Isha Prusha, and a woman who abstains, who's an aesthetic woman, which is not really what women are supposed to be, but we'll see. I'm going to explain all these. Umakas Prushim, and the wounds of the ascetics. Okay? For example, the guy wants to act very humble. One of the ways of showing humility is to not go with an arrogant pace. You don't go with your nose up in the air like this, you know? So what do you do? Okay, I'm going to be very religious. He's going to look straight at the ground the whole day long. What does he do? He bangs into walls. He trips over things. He has to go to emergency. You know, that's what we call wounds of the ascetics. All these things, what do you get from all of them? Harelu mavale olam. These are people who destroy the world because their insincere behavior and their deceptions, we will see all of these examples later on, bring destruction to the world. Okay, now let's go back and discuss about the idea was, we're talking about scratching out the parchment words. So now we're going to focus on one aspect of scratching out the parchment words. The Gemara is going to relate to a story of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying in the name of Rabbi Meir. He's going to say that one time, he's going to discuss, he was learning by certain rabbis, and some had issues with a certain behavior he had. He was a scribe, and he used a special type of, material for the ink. And the question is this a good ink or not to use? And there's a discussion as to this conflicting stories. We go back and forth on this. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rab Meir. This is a braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says the name of Rab Meir. So this was a story of Rab Meir. Okay, so Rab Meir is telling us the following story. Kishahayisi lama Torah Eitzel Rabbi Akiva. When I was studying Torah by Rabbi Akiva, Rab Meir was a student of Rabbi Akiva. So what I would do, because he was a sofer, the mayor was a sofer, hayisi matil kankantum letoch hajo. I would put kankantum into the ink. Now, we already discussed what kankantum is. If you don't remember, look at this. Bingo. You just press that button, it takes you back to the source. Okay. It says, we don't write with, look at the yellow, v'lo kosiv, v'lo bakomos, you don't write with gum, v'lo ban kankantum, which is ferrous sulfate. Okay? But the main point is, because it gets absorbed in the parch and leaves an indelible mark. So that's why you can't put, we already said, you can't put kankantum. All right? Whatever ferrous sulfate is, you could look it up and Google it and see what all its properties are. Whatever it does, when you put it in the ink, it makes the ink, it's permanent ink. That's the point. That's it. I didn't want to do that. Now it took me all the way to 17B. Okay, I got to be a little bit more proficient. Let's just do this then. Okay, I'm okay. I'm back to normal. So what I used to put kankantum in the ink, which we've already learned before, it's not allowed. Anyway, and he probably saw me doing this. Velomerli Dover, he didn't tell me anything. He didn't criticize me, didn't object that I was using kankantum. Fine. Then, Keshabasi Eitzel Rabbi Shmuel, then when I went to study by Rabbi Shmuel, I was using the kankantum. And Amar Lehi and Reb Shmuel said to me, Bini, my son, Ma Malachta, what's your work? Amar Tilo, I said, Lav Lorani, I'm a scribe. Amar Lehi, he said to me, oh, you're a scribe. Bini Havizar, my son, be careful. Why? In other words, do your job as best as you can, particularly you, as opposed to a guy who's a shoemaker or something else. Shemalachtacha Malecha Shemayim, because the work that you do is heavenly work. And any mistake could be disastrous, the littlest mistake. Kashema tachzer os achas. Should you omit but one letter in a Sefer Torah? Otater os achas. Or add one letter to a Sefer Torah, or tefillin, or mezuzahs, or whatever. Nimtzas atom machrives kol olam kulo. It'll come out, you will destroy the entire world. And you're wondering, how could he destroy the entire world by doing that? Okay, you're going to say, maybe not doing the mitzvah. What do you mean destroying the word? So give an example. For example, we say every day, Hashem Elohim Emes. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Now, what if you just happen to knock out, forget about the Aleph in the word Emes? Now a Christian will read the Bible, right? Going to read our Torah, and it's going to say, Hashem Elohim Mes. Hashem is dead. Well, that would not be good. And now we're going to, and that's the copy we have. Remember, they didn't have printing presses were computers and easy to correct and all these things. You went and wrote in the Torah, and now the guys, how did they learn in those days? How did they learn? How did the Rebbe teach his kids? They took a scroll of Yirmiyahu out, and the Rebbe started reading it. Or you start reading if you had a scroll in your house. And you come to the pasuk, Hashem Elokim Meis. Well, I guess they're right. God is dead. He was alive till Yirmiyahu's time. And now Yirmiyahu says he's dead. Or, let's try another one. Yes, or what about the vav? A vav to the word bara, to the word bara. Bereshis bara Elohim. In the beginning, God created. What if you add a vav? Bereshis baru. In the beginning, they gods created. That's more than one God. So in other words, one letter can literally destroy what the world will understand about God. So you got to be really careful. It's besides the fact you make one mistake. Let's say it doesn't change the meaning. Of course, imagine a person putting on tefillin a whole lifetime, never doing the mitzvah once. Can you imagine if you're missing one letter and you spent $5,000 on the tefillin and the sofer was just lacks in one little letter and you put it on? You know how many brachal of atolos you made in your life? Two times as many days. You know, just imagine you're making probably 600 brachal of atolos over 50 years. 30,000, and you not once did the mitzvah of tefillin. He's saying, forget about that. That's bad enough. But you're going to corrupt the Torah itself. And that, see, it's interesting why the good boy, he picked that example more than anything else. Anyway, so he says, so be careful of your work. So remember, says, Rebbe, you don't have to worry. I'm really careful. And now he shows an example how careful he was. Amarti lo, I said to him, Dover echad yeshli, there's a little ingredient, shani mate letoch adyo, that I put in the ink, to really make sure that even the most bizarre mistake by accident doesn't happen. And what's this little ingredient called? Vekankantum shemo. And its name is kankanos. What is sulfuric sulfate? Whatever it was. Ferrous sulfate.
Why would that change if you made a mistake?
Just... Wait. He's going to say. He's going to explain how this helps. First of all, it's many things. You can make mistakes, but sometimes, you know, you're writing a sefer, and all of a sudden a fly starts flying by. A fly went by, and he drops himself, right? And let's say you when you're a sefer, you'll write, and you may walk away for a little to let the ink dry. Go to get a coffee, let the ink dry. Then a little fly flies right on top of a letter, and smudges a little bit, and that makes the letter, let's say, a dalet into a resh, which only means misleading. So, you know, so I'm so careful that even accidents beyond my control I prevent by putting the kankantum in. Okay, what do I do? And you'll see why in a minute, why that helps. Omar Lee, so Rabbi Shmuel said, V'chimatilin kankantum letoch adyo? Are you allowed to put kankantum in the ink? You can't do that because you're going to see now, we're going to quote now the story with the sota. But again, the idea with the fly, I don't think Gemara is going to say it, or I saw it in Rashi in the Forshim. Oh, no, it's going to, Gemara is going to say it. Torah Amra, the Torah said, now we're coming back to the story with the Sota now. And we'll have to see, there's going to be questions on this. But Rabbi Shmuel says, it says by the Sota, after the Kohen writes those psukim, he scratches it out. Umacha, he erases it. So it has to be something that's erasable. Ksav sheyuchal limchos. It has to be a writing that is able to be erased. Right? So therefore, kind of Rabbi Shmuel was saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. So he's saying, when I first was by Rabbi Akiva, I was using kankantum. He didn't tell me anything. Rabbi Shmuel found out I was using kankantum. He said, I shouldn't use it. Because by the sota, we shouldn't use it. Now, the obvious question is, wait a minute, he's talking about writing a sefer Torah, and Rabbi Shmuel's talking about the sota, which, okay, maybe by the sota he doesn't. So we'll have to see. This is going to spill into a whole Pandora's box as we're coming over here. Now, look what's going on over here. Here is where the notes are already going to tell us to be wary of what's coming up. Rabbi Shmuel holds that these verses written in a regular Torah scroll, look at this, can be used for the sota procedure. In other words, you could take from a Torah scroll, let's say you're a Torah scribe and you have a Torah scroll, and whatever, let's say over time, the Torah scroll becomes possible. So why put the whole thing in Geniza? I can always save the four psukim and Parshas Naso and always use it for a sota. Now this, I know we already learned a while ago, you can't make it for a different one. Well, guess what, guys? This is a machlokes. We're stumbling into a machlokes. If you can use something that was used for something else for the sota scribing for the coin now. That's what we're stumbling into, this machlokes. So Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, he does not require that the sota scroll be written expressly for the particular sota. Until now, we've only learned opinions that held the opposite. Thus, his objection to the use of kankantum in the writing of the Torah scroll is filled with regard to the verses concerning the sota. In other words, he's saying, you know, you shouldn't do this because maybe one day a kohen will use that parchment, even though you wrote it for a sefer Torah, he'll use it for a sota, and it won't totally scratch off, and it won't be good for the sota. Alternatively, Rabbi Shmuel extends this condition to the writing of the entire Torah, either exegetically or really as a rabbinic safeguard. Or he could say, as two machlokas, what Rabbi Shmuel holds. Will it be the opinion that says you don't have to write these parshas specifically for a specific sota, and therefore you can even take up from an old Torah scroll? Or saying, you know what? No. Maybe Rabbi Shmuel holds you got to have it specifically for a sota. But once a sofer has some kankantum on his desk, and he uses it for sefer Torahs, and of course he won't use it for a sota, let's say. But once it's on the desk, you know, you get used to it. What does a sofer do 99% of the time? He writes Torah scrolls. He writes sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzahs. Kankantum is fine. So you think when the one time he's going to write now for the sota, he may forget and put the kankantum in there too. And then won't be able to scratch it out properly. So that would be like a rabbinic decree that everything you do in Safra should not have kankantum, because, you know, it's going to become automatic. You just put kankantum. Therefore, he says, You can't use it. Now, this was a very... There was a lot of explanation over here. The Gemara only gave it to us cryptic words without all the Eretz Scroll explanation. Now, I want to know, what was the give and take over here? My Kamarle, what was Reb Meir telling him about that I even use Konkanim? What does that have to do with the guy? The guy tells him, Rabbi Shmuel says, be careful, don't make any mistakes. Oh, don't worry, I even use Konkanim. So what kind of answer is that? I already told it to you, but what kind of answer? That's more to ask. Well, my guy, what was he answering back? So Haki Kamarle, this is what Reb Meir said to him. He says, lo mi boy b'chaser shesh. You don't have to worry that I'm going to miss a letter or add a letter, because number one, Rebbe, the book, yeah, I'm an expert. I know the whole Talmud, the Bible by heart, letter by letter, everything. You don't have to worry. I'm never going to make a mistake there. But even something that might be beyond my control, ela afilu l'meichas l'zvuv, even if we have to worry about a fly, the dilma that maybe osiv yosiv ataga d'dalad, maybe he'll come and rest upon the crown of the Dalet, the upper down. Look, 35. Look how the Dalet on the left side ends. It ends going up. See a little part on the left side, a little point going up? So what would happen if a fly would rest right on the little point of the top of the Dalet and do a little bit of scratching its back on that, and then he'd fly away, and what would he leave? He'd leave you the letter Resh. You see how that would happen? Because a resh is no different than a dalet, except in the fact that the dalet has a little more of a point on the left-hand side. I can't make it any bigger, guys.
But isn't it also on the right-hand side, extends a little beyond the...
Maybe, but the main psoul... No, they're about the same size. The main psoul is the corner on the top. The left top, the real difference... between a dalet and a resh, is a resh does not have so much of a point at the top, while the dalet has a much more pronounced thing. So he's saying, and that's what he would do. He'd scratch it out, umash v'lei resh. He turned the letter into a resh instead of a dalet. And what would that be? A profound mistake. Where Hashem acher. All you got to do, remember, there's no dots in the Torah. If you make that dal into a resh, it's not a chod, it's a cher. Hashem's another one. Not one, but another one. So therefore, mashal resh, which would say in that pasuk, so to avoid that, dovar echod yeshli, I have one ingredient, shani mata l'toch adyo, I put it into the ink, v'kan kantum shemo, and it's kan kantkum. So the point is, what does it mean? So even a fly will rub out some of the ink, but the impression of the original writing will remain. So we wouldn't make a mistake of the dalet of the resh. Now, we're not talking about the kashrus of the Sefer Torah. Maybe it has to be fixed up. But the person will clearly know it's a dalet and not a resh, because it's not totally erased. There's still an impression. The kankan leaves an impression. So he's saying, Rabbi, don't worry. I'm taking my job very seriously. Even such a happy... an obscure mistake couldn't happen. To this, Rabbi Shmuel didn't, and to which Rabbi Shmuel criticized him and said, no, you shouldn't use kan kantum, because kan kantum, when we're going to have a sota, we're going to be a problem. Now, either Rabbi Shmuel holds that you could use a Sefer Torah for the Megillah for the sota, or he holds it's just a rabbinic decree to avoid ever making that problem. We don't want ever done an A Sefer Torah. That's Rabbi Shmuel. So now that's the story. The Gemara now is going to have a problem because there's another brisa that seems to reverse the story and reverse the positions. So let's get it clear. Brisa 1, Reb Meir is the sofer. He first goes to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, no problems. It must have been obvious Rabbi Akiva saw he used kan kantum and didn't say anything, or else there's no point in telling us that part of the story. So it must be Rabbi Akiva said kan kantum was fine when you're writing a Sefer Torah. Rabbi Shmuel, when he comes to later, says you shouldn't use kan kantum. Fine. The Gemara says, wait a minute, that brisa, that's totally wrong. Because there's another brisa that says the exact opposite of the very same story. Any, it's not so. Shmuel, remember, who was telling over this story? Let's go back. Where did we start from? It started from Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Meir. Notice Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Shmuel, told over a story that Reb Meir said. In other words, this is hearsay evidence. It's Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Reb Shmuel saying what Reb Meir said. Well, I'll tell you what, I have a brisa of what Reb Meir actually said himself. which is different than the way people are saying over. There's no, like news agencies, you know. You hear, but certainly Chachamim were a lot more credible. They could make an honest mistake. But we have another version of the story. V'atanu Rav Abraisa, where Rav Meir directly says the following. Not somebody says over, I heard from Rav Meir. It's Rav Meir himself in Abraisa. Amar Rav Meir said, look at the differences. You'll see two big differences. Number one, Kesharisi Lama Tara Eitzel Rabbi Shmuel, when I went to study by Rabbi Shmuel, remember we're mentioning Rabbi Shmuel first and not Rabbi Akiva now. That's the first difference. Hayisi Matel Kankantum Lutocha Jo, I put Kankantum in the ink. He didn't tell me anything. Now, wait a minute. In the last story, he went to Rabbi Shmuel last, and Rabbi Shmuel criticized him. Now, Kishabasi Eitzel Rabbi Akiva. Then when I came to Rabbi Akiva, also he said, I can't use Kankantum. So we have two contradictions between the two brises. Kasha Shimush Ashimus, who have a question of the sequence of the studying upon the studying. Brisa 1 says he went to Rabbi Akiva first and then to Rabbi Shmuel. Brisa 2, Rabbi Meir himself says he first went to Rabbi Shmuel and went to Rabbi Akiva. Which one was it? You know, did the guy first go to, the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael and then study in Lakewood? Or did he study in Lakewood first or go, your guy writes on his resume for a shidduch? Did he first study in Lakewood or go to the Mir Yeshiva? I mean, which one was it? Question number one. More importantly, Kasha Asra, Asra. We're also, it's a contradiction between who prohibited versus who prohibited. In story one, it was Rabbi Shmuel who prohibited the Kankantum. In story two, it's Rabbi Akiva, not Rabbi Shmuel prohibited the Kankantum. So there's our conflicting stories. So what do we understand? Okay. Now, Bishlema Shimusha Shimush Lakash. We can get out of the first question about the order of studying, because Gemara is going to now say perhaps there was three steps. You know, we think, well, it's only one way or the other. Either he first learned by Rabbi Kiva and then Rabbi Shmuel, or he first learned by Rabbi Shmuel and then Rabbi Kiva. How about the following? What if he studied by Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Shmuel, and then went back to Rabbi Akiva? Then the two brises wouldn't be, at least in terms of where he studied, it wouldn't be in conflict. Because one time he first went to Rabbi Akiva, and then he went to Rabbi Shmuel, and then he continues the story and says that, and then after Rabbi Shmuel, I went back to Rabbi Akiva. So we can get out of that problem. That's not such a big problem. We can get out of that, and he's going to explain. We could say, Meikar in the beginning, Asal Kama to Rabbi Akiva. First he went to study Rabbi Akiva, but you know, sometimes a bar goes to yeshiva, and the level is way over him. Now, let's say a guy first graduates high school, would first go to, let's say, Brisk. Okay, first of all, they wouldn't accept him. The guy wants to learn in Brisk in Eretz Yisrael, they would not accept him. But let's say he'd go, and the reason why, because it'd be over his head. He goes to Brisk, sits in for a few weeks, he says, I don't understand what's going on over here. I got to go to another yeshiva where it's a little easier. And then when I build myself up, then I can go back to yeshiva. That's what happened here. He went first to Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva. Remember, yeshiva was a big Kabbalist. He darshaned every crown on the letters. Remember, the Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu was able to go into the future, sit in a Rabbi Akiva's shir, and Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't understand a word he's saying. And this is the one who gave us the Torah, because Rabbi Akiva learned the deeper esoteric stuff and the sources from the crowns that Moshe wasn't privy to. So anyway, he goes to Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva. Kiva de lo matzi, since he couldn't ascertain his true opinion, we're going to see it. So, come my libe. Since he couldn't do that, what does that mean? Rabbi Akiva was such a brilliant logician that he could cogently defend either side of a question, which he did in his discourses. He would give you both sides of the coin equally smart. Usually, you go to a rabbi, he says, this is the opinion. And that's what you're doing. He says, no. He was a real, you know, a theoretical studier. Thus, Rav Meir could not gain knowledge of the actual laws from Rav Akiva, since it was difficult to understand whether Rav Akiva was reporting the actual law or stating the opposite law in order to determine the possible logic of that position. So therefore, he went to find a different teacher. It was too hard for him. Right? So therefore, Aslo Kame to Rabbi Shmuel. He goes to Rabbi Shmuel, V'gomar Gemara. And he learned Gemara. Here we try, he learned the traditions. In other words, the various laws and rulings of the Oral Torah. He was successful to learn from him. This is just a technical point. Gemara, when the Gemara uses the term Gemara, we got to know what the term Gemara really means. So Gemara, tradition, refers to the text of the Mishnah as it was handed down from previous generations without analyzing them or resolving apparent contradictions. That's how the Gemara uses the word Gemara. We don't use it that way, but that's a problem. Anyway, so what did Rabbi Shmuel do? Rabbi Shmuel says, listen, I'm just going to teach you Brises, Mishnayos. This one says this law, this is this law. We don't get into contradiction. Really what he's saying is he taught him Gemara means he didn't teach him Gemara. Gemara used the word Gemara, tradition really means Mishnayos. Okay? He was teaching him Gemara means to learn, to hand over a tradition, to finish off. So in other words, he taught him lots of Mishnayos, so he learned laws. He didn't get, well, you know, this contradicts this from here. How are we going to resolve the contradiction? Well, I wasn't ready for that. He was just learning, we'll call, quote-unquote, the simpler Torah from Rabbi Yishmael. Now, once he mastered the simple law, where he knew all the opinions, then, Hadar Asal Akami to Rabbi Akiva, then he went back to Rabbi Akiva, Svar Svara, and then he studied Svara. Svara is logic and analysis. So that's okay. So it's very good. First he went to Rabbi Akiva, and it was too logical for him. So he left. He goes to Rabbi Shmuel. Then, Rabbi Shmuel, he learned really good. Then he was ready to start learning the logic by him. Now, let's just do another terminology. More use the word svara. Svara reasons refers to subjecting one's learning to rigorous analysis and resolving whatever questions arise. That is to understand why a certain thing was tummy and another Torah, why one was permitted and another prohibited, and to find the logic or biblical source for each law. This was the nature of Torah study at the times of the Tanoim, in addition to which they would analyze every new issue that arose by seeking a precedent from the Mishnah or by expounding a verse. Okay, interesting. So this was called Svara, right? Now look, Rashi calls this analysis Talmud. Okay, I'm studying Talmud, a term that in time was considered offensive to the church, which the censors then often replaced with Shas or Gemara. And it could be the word here, Gemara, isn't the real word they wanted to use. Remember, that unfortunately, there were heretics, Yeshiva Bachram, who went off the derech and went into the church. Can you imagine if a Yeshiva Bachram goes to the church? How much smarter we are than the non-Jews. Come on, what did the priests learn already? Latin, learn a little Bible. They learn Rashi. I mean, come on. The real good drushes come from knowing all the Mephorshim, knowing all the Gemara. Can you imagine why they wanted to get yeshiva boys to get into the church? Number one, they're more brilliant than them. Number two, they know all the Jewish secrets. Where do all the pogroms and all this stuff, a lot of it come from? It came from Jewish apostates who quote all these statements that would be damaging. If you don't know them in the right context, be damaging. Anyway, for whatever reason, the word Talmud, the censors of the church found offensive. I don't know why. And therefore, we change it with the word Shas or Gemara, although the latter replacement actually blurs the distinction between these two aspects of Torah study. Okay, but that's basically where, so the Gemara is using the words Gemara and Svara to explain, one is explaining just the laws and one is the logic. Okay, so we took care of the sequence. So it could be first he studied Rabbi Akiva, didn't work, then he went to Rabbi Shmuel. That's one story. Then the next story is, after leaving Rabbi Shmuel, he goes back to Rabbi Akiva. So that's not a problem. But the real problem is, we have different rabbis saying different opinions. Who's saying what? Ella, Asura, Asura. One rabbi said it's allowed, and one said it's not, and you're mixing up the names. Kasha, that is a real question. So how's Gemara going to deal with this? You're not going to like this? Gemara says, you're right. Kasha, it's indeed difficult. That's it. That's it. We don't have an answer for it. That's Gemara says, generally, when the Gemara concludes with this term, it means that though the difficulty is indeed strong, it's not necessarily unresolvable. And now we'd have to look in all kinds of commentaries for possible resolutions. You know, in other words, okay, so there's a difference of opinion. It looks like there's a difference of opinion. Okay, it could be answered, but we're not going to bother with it. Why? I don't know. But that's we're not going to deal with it. We've got more important things we want to deal with. And that's going to lead us to the next price. But here's a perfect place to stop on the bottom line.
So we don't know if you can use that to stop the Inkolot.
Well, no. The halachas tell us if you can or not. And basically, so we'll come back to that. Monday's discussion will further go into this. Now that we fell into Kan Kantum, we get more into Kan Kantum.
So you can't use the Torah scroll for Sotos?
What?
If you just say you can't use a Torah scroll for all the stuff in the Megillah,
so that, okay, but there's a machlokas.
I don't know, maybe just say, okay, we'll make a fence around it, you can't do it, and then the fence is not there.